Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wiss.
Hey, everybody, this is Greg with the Brothers Wiss, number 97. I'm getting close to that magical 100. And today, we have some very special guests with us. I am excited. My two favorite Andrews in the whole world. We've got Andrew Thrift. You have to say words, bud.
Oh, hello.
Try some of those ones we were talking about before.
Yeah, the four-lettered ones.
Fish and chips.
I mean, sorry, guys.
All right, so this is Andrew Thrift. He is technically a Kiwi, but he is in Australia right now, behind enemy lines.
I am. Enjoying every moment of it, mate.
That's awesome. And then below him, at least on my screen, we've got Andrew Cox.
Hello.
Hello.
That's a word. That's all you get. Yeah.
That's enough.
G'day, mate.
You got Greg from Texas, and you've got Mikey from Chicagoland.
Hey.
And just one word out of Mikey, too. There you go. So I hope you
And it was shorter than hello.
You know, so this is supposed to introduce you to the people listening so they recognize your voice, they know who's talking. So you got to give them more than just a hey or a hi or whatever it happens to be. All right. So let's get to the nitty gritty. We've got a new patron this week. It's Brock Tice. Super nice guy. I like it. He hit the ground running. He got in the patron only Slack. You go to patreon.com/brothers wisp. You join in. We give you a link. You jump in the Slack. And immediately, day one, that guy is throwing in content, asking questions, answering questions. I love it. Love seeing people get in there. Not to say I resent the lurkers. I don't. That's fine. I lurk a lot as well. Especially when these two guys on the right side of the screen start talking. I have no idea what they're saying. I just, you know, right click, Google that. Okay, now let me Google this.
I didn't know our accents came across in the typing.
What were you? Yeah, earlier Thrift was saying we were going to talk about chapstick. I was pretty lost on that one. It turns out he meant chipsets. So, well, you know, either way, I'm good. You know, I prefer the minty sort of ones, not the medicated ones. Those are supposed to be bad for you. From what I understand, let's see. So
are you applying it in the right place, Greg?
no comment. I mean, is there really a wrong way to do a chapstick? I don't think so.
You know? Look, when it says remove cap and push up bottom, it means the chapstick.
I thought it was just, you know, I was supposed to carry my derriere a little bit higher. You know, everybody likes a good. I've been cycling a lot. Dude is really filling things out. Kind of. It plumps things. It's nice. So, you know, it used to kind of be like there's like kind of a negative void there. But now I actually have a butt. It's far more comfortable to sit on. And I'm sure everybody's happier for knowing that. So let's see. The first thing I have in here, which is probably the least important, is that I just realized that I've been blogging for over 10 years now, which, by the by, is started the blog. And then this weird kid named Crusher started commenting on there, which is Andrew Cox. Then met him in Vegas for the first time, and then through the blog, I met.
What happens in Vegas is supposed to stay in Vegas.
I know, that's right. I met JJ, and then I met Wilson, and then Mike, and then all these other guys. Thrift. I met Thrift through Coxie, and he told me who Thrift was on the forums. I was like, holy shit, I can't talk to this guy. He's like celebrity status. I was afraid, but he is like the most pleasant, nicest guy. And so, in essence, I started that blog not knowing where I was going with it, and ultimately I made all of these friends, and through this we started this podcast, and by the by, now you're listening to it, so there you go. So developed this really cool community from something I had no idea why I was going to get started. So thank you guys for being part of whatever this is, and hopefully it turns out to be something actually useful at some point in the future. Everyone can hold out hope. So anyway, moving to more interesting things, there's a guy, Michael Ducharme. He has emailed me a couple of times. He's a very verbose guy. He's very detail-oriented. I like that. I had talked about using Ansible the other day, and he hit a bug in Ansible. Ansible says it's not a bug. There was a fix where if the word yes or no shows up in an Ansible playbook, right, kind of the scripts you use to apply things, Ansible will automatically translate those words to true or false to fix things in Linux. And that is not a a bug the way they automatically do that. So there's these crazy acrobatics you have to do. You have to like create a variable and then use this special string character telling it, make sure this stays yes or make sure this stays no, which is insanity. Because if you use the word yes and you like, you know, you escape it, it shouldn't try and autocorrect that stuff to something else. But they said it would break a bunch of other things if they change that behavior back. So just something to keep in mind, because in MikroTik, sometimes it's yes or no, right? It's I don't think there is a true or false in MikroTik, right? It's always yes or no. So
there's disable and enable, and there's yes and no. There are places where you can check true or false, like if something exists, but to go on like a Tom Smith style rant, there is not uniform consistency across across the configuration.
Because some stuff it'll say disabled and you'll say yes or no, right? And then other places the same nomenclature will be completely different, right?
It's, some places it's different in Winbox to what it is in command line as well. So you got to watch out for that. Always like tabbed autocomplete, and you're like, okay, is it supposed to be one or the other?
Excellent.
It's I use tab complete a lot. just tab complete everything. That way I don't have to know what's going on.
Throw in a question mark every now and then. It'll prompt you with what you need. But yeah, just keep that in mind for Ansible. Jimmy, my friend, is on the Tiger team for Ansible. And he said, yeah, do it in the variable thing. That's all he said about it. He didn't say anything more about it. So I guess there's no...
Some sort of holy war going on.
This is the way it's going to be, and this is the kind of official workaround that they've got to use that stuff with. So moving on from Ansible is I have this special case where I'm doing an install at a place, and all the cables for the adjoining rooms were supposed to go right back into this central location. Well, it's a modular design facility. It's coming, being built in like Alabama and being delivered over here on the back of a truck. Lo and behold, they forgot to put in the right conduit. So there's not enough space to actually pull all of the cables. So they're like, we're gonna need to put a switch above the kitchen. And you get to figure out, you know, how it goes from there, which is terrible, right? So say the cable gets damaged, I have to get some yahoo to go up above the kitchen and do like cable testing. It's like, it's not ideal. So I was thinking, how can I PoE power a switch up there? Because I want to still be able to reboot this thing. So I've got a PoE switch, a 24 porter that's going to light up a HAPAC. Of course, the HAPAC 2 doesn't have a PoE output port on it, unfortunately. Otherwise, that would be easy just to daisy chain them together. So I thought, get two of those passive PoE bricks, which I did, and I get the PoE from the wall. It goes into the brick. And then the barrel jack splits out into a Y. One goes into the HAPAC, and then one goes into another passive PoE injector and shoots up to the switch. So it's super MacGyvered. Is that the nicest way of saying it? It's very rigged, but it PoE powers both devices. And if for whatever reason that switch up in the ceiling happens to break, I can power cycle all of it at once. So that's better than nothing. It's still not ideal. I hate the idea of people having to test cable up in the ceiling. Not that that happens very often. Usually it's what, the wall port, like the jack on the wall port gets bricked, or maintenance will come in and paint it over. That's a fun one, right? So they just have to replace it there. So it's usually not too terrible. I'm sure Andrew's run into these kind of shenanigans a lot.
I've definitely seen these ones. We also have beer poured on access points every now and again. I don't know how that happened. Like, it's rested something on it. But I feel like that MacGyver reference, like, where we're slowly moving away from a generation that knows who MacGyver is, should just, like, start referring to, like, other YouTubers or something. Be like, it's like a jerry-rig everything, or a... MacGyver, for anyone who doesn't know, there's 7 seasons you can watch of this guy. Amazing mullet. Makes things work with its paper clips and bits of things he finds in his pocket. Yeah. So
mullet's breathtaking. I used to love that show when I was a kid, but don't rewatch it. Don't rewatch it now. It's
ruins it for you.
It's so bad. It's so bad.
There's 7 seasons.
Oh gosh. I've rewatched most of them.
You watched the new MacGyver?
I have not. That's right. They rebooted
it. Son of MacGyver, is it? That's supposed to be his son, isn't it?
Oh, I have no idea.
Son of MacGyver.
I haven't watched either of them. I mean, like, well, I watched some MacGyver when I was a kid, but that's not something I've...
Not something you're proud of? I get it.
I like them.
Things we're ashamed of. So my switch I'm using up in the ceiling, because I couldn't really find a lot of switches that you can really power via PoE. I'm using a 250 or 260 GS, like a Microtik. So it go in and it's still gig and everything. I guess, you know what? I could get yet a third passive PoE brick and put that in the ceiling with a regular switch. I could do that. And then I could just get one of those $12 switches.
How do you feel about those new Microtik PoE switches that are coming out? The ones that are like supposed to be the outdoor ones. Would you use those in a ceiling space?
The backfed ones?
Yeah. Well, no, not necessarily the backfed ones. There's both. There's ones that are backfed, and there's ones that have the main feed and then feed out. So they're similar to the... Ubiquiti has a similar one as well, the ESP16 or whatever it is, that's designed to sit on a pole somewhere, be relatively water and dust proof.
Well, these at the most only need to aggregate 3 user ports.
Ah, fair enough.
So they just need to be super tiny. There's no...
Power box?
Is that accepts PoE in to power it, and then... Well, I don't need PoE out of this Joker. I just need it to be a switch in the ceiling. I was looking at like $12 switches, like gigabit switches. So I could do that and pair it with like $11 passive brick. So that would save me, because I need like 150 of these. So that would save me a bit. Maybe I'll think about that. It's getting awfully rigged, though. I don't know. You know, it's like, how far do you want to push your luck? I just don't want too many components where you can't physically touch them. That's the thing. Ugh. If it can go wrong, it will go wrong. I just, you know, not that me rigging stuff ever goes bad, because that could never happen. let's see. So I'm officially writing the CCNA for LinkedIn Learning. And I don't know why, but I think Cisco's really turned this into the new CCNA. I mean, it's gotten a complete rewrite, right? So it's completely different. They're basically doing a core exam for the CCNA. And then, so it used to be you would do like CCNA wireless or CCNA routing or CCNA voice, right? They had them all broke out. Now there's a core exam. And then if you want to specialize, you pick, okay, I got the core done. Now I'll get the CCNA wireless, or I'll get the CCNA route switch. And, you know, it just kind of tags onto the core. And part of the core exam now is you have to be able to go into Cisco's wireless LAN controller via the GUI and configure wire settings like SSID and security stuff, which is kind of odd. So it seems like from a lot of the stuff they're covering in here, which this is fascinating because I have to build the course before the official Cisco study material actually exists. It doesn't come out until September 27th, and they want it delivered by mid-October. So I get like 2 weeks to fact check everything I'm building and fix it really fast and then record it. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be an adventure. I couldn't say no, because then they would have given it to somebody else, and I want the money, obviously.
I just want to say, I, for one, am really excited to be listening to it. I've needed something to help me get to sleep again for a while.
Oh, you shut your dirty mouth.
Just for anyone who hasn't tried it, Craig's dulcet tones just lulling you to sleep. So no,
I just thought it was interesting how the other one. They've turned the CCNA into a marketing flyer to some degree, right? I'm not going to totally say that is 100% across the board the case, but they really are. So I also noticed they have in their exam topics, there's like next gen firewall and stuff like that. And I don't know how in depth I get, but it's weird. It's just a whole bunch of little products that you have to be able to cover, but it just seems so strange. How many enterprises have you run into that actually use the virtual wireless LAN controller or the wireless LAN controller period? I've only been in maybe 3 or 4 out of, you know, 60 or 100 or however many. So to me, it's shrewd. It's shrewd. It's very clever of them to force you to start utilizing their products. But I also look at it as how many people taking the CCNA have access to a wireless LAN controller to actually practice this stuff. It's, mm-hmm. it's probably not very many. So having said that, I found out a quick way to install it on Proxmox and get it spun up. Once you actually have the ISO, it really only takes 10 minutes and you have it up and available, and you can do all the clicky bits you need for the CCNA. I just apparently the CCNA.
I'm going to spin one up and give access to our Patreon guys so they can play around with it.
I made a quick blog post. It's like five lines. It's just do these things, blah, 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 and then you've got access. So I don't.
I wouldn't mind having it poke around.
It's very ugly still. It's very utilitarian. It's reminiscent of a Winbox sort of interface. You know, it gets the job done.
From 1997.
Yeah, very no frills. So it's exactly what you need and nothing more. It's certainly not unified. It's not very pretty. From what I understand too, the CCMP, their rewrite, it's got even more virtual wireless LAN controller or just wireless LAN controller configuration stuff in there, which is interesting. I guess
I think it makes sense the way they've divided it out. So you've got your core or your base and then the add-on parts, but they should put that sort of those sort of topics in the add-on part. So they shouldn't have the WLC stuff in the core. It should just be in the wireless LAN part.
I am 100% on board with that. That's what I was thinking. If you're going to do wireless specialization, then put the wireless stuff in the wireless specialization. I understand learning the terminology, learning what SSIDs are, you know, a little bit about RF, 2.4 overlapping channels, all that stuff absolutely makes sense to be in the core, right? Because every engineer nowadays is going to touch wireless.
Rudimentary knowledge.
Yeah. Everybody's going to touch wireless. Not very many of these people are going to use the wireless LAN controller, I don't think. So it seems like that would be more specialized.
Well, I think part of the confusion is that you're confusing the CCNA program with actual certification and training of people. What it is it's an extension of Cisco marketing.
Well, the CCNA was definitely history written by Cisco. I'll give you that, right? It's you know, the victors write the history books, right? The losers don't. So they forged
back
a lot of this ground.
Created.
So a lot of their specific, you know, we did it this way, so this is how it only can exist, right? So that's a lot of it in there. But it used to not be them kind of forcing you to use, I'm not going to say niche products, but to me, like in a core exam, the wireless LAN controller feels like a niche device, you know? It's like they're not asking you to, I would liken it to saying in the CCNA, all right, now you have to use ASDM and configure something on an ASA. It's like that's, you know what I mean? That's very product specific. It doesn't really feel like it fits, but I don't know. It's interesting. If you want to install the virtual wireless LAN controller, it's not hard. If you want to poke around, if you ever run into a environment where you're going to be configuring one and you just need to test some stuff, it's not so bad. So you can get in there and try it out. All right. So something else of note is I always forget this. If you put a period before a file in Linux, it makes it hidden. And when you do an ls, it doesn't show it. So I was fighting with a Apache install because the admin who like does the website stuff put an htaccess file in there, and I couldn't find it for like 2 hours because it's hidden. I wasted so much damn time.
Want your life back?
Oh my god! It's just Greg. If there's a period, it's hidden. Please look for hidden files.
I always run ls-hal. Just show me everything. Show me the size in a human readable format. And that makes it a little bit easier.
All right, I'll try and remember that. I'll try and remember that next time. All right. So one other interesting little product was Miller found a Goal Zero Yeti. I'd never heard of these. They're using it for generator replacement. I think it's basically just a bunch of lithium ion batteries, I think, stacked in a nice little wheelie sort of. Kind of looks like those coolers. Kind of looks like a cooler that you can wheel around. And I think he was saying they were getting like 150 hours of runtime out of it. So if they were going and doing a show for a weekend or temporary install or I don't know, whatever they're using it for. I think they also had it like some radio strapped to the top of a van for a temporary project, and they were driving the van around on top of a parking structure, like as the thing moved around, and they just had that in there running it for the weekend. So that's pretty cool.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
Like an extra large juice box.
Somebody put it, on here about UNMS free cloud hosting. What's the story on that?
Yeah, so Ubiquity recently announced that they're making a free cloud instance of their UNMS service available to everyone. The limitations are basically you have to put more than, I think it's 10 devices in it within the first week, or they'll just clear them out. But the goal from their side is to sort of open that up to people, and that's UNMS with the customer management system built into it. So you can basically, as an ISP, you can track your customers' sites if you want to do that. You can track all your own equipment. You can actually do all your billing and stuff through there. Very interesting move from them, given the likes of Sonar and other things exist. They're trying to get a piece of every pie, it seems, with they'll do the financing for your wireless gear. They're doing UNMS for free in the cloud. And you can now get, in certain areas, you can buy bandwidth off Ubiquity as well,
yeah,
I believe.
Heard that.
Yeah.
So it's very for this whole octopus thing going on at the moment. We'll move out into everywhere. Oh, and all the solar gear is out now too.
Yeah. So, we were talking about that last week about, I can't remember what they're called. Actually, I have the show notes here. Let me click the button. It's their Ubiquity SunMax Solar is what they're calling it. And it is the SunMax Solar Switch and Solar Point. The Solar Switch is indoor, Solar Point's outdoor, and it charges a battery and can spit out 24 volts. It's not a lot of output, but it's kind of an all-in-one box, right? You just attach your panels, attach your batteries, and away you go sort of thing. I think, it's interesting. So UNMS, that's basically your customer management, right? And you said it does billing and everything, right?
It's both. It's your network management system. So you put your switches, your wireless links, everything in there. It tracks all the details from those. It backs up the configs and everything. It's a bit like it's like when Microchip came out with the Dude, only this is entirely within the cloud at the moment. They give you, I think there's like 25 gig of storage by default provisioned on the systems, which is plenty for that sort of data. And they've sort of said, if you're an ISP with over a few thousand devices, then reach out to us, and we can probably sort something out for you. Nope. But yeah.
So do you have any reservations with that?
Yes.
I have. Do you want to go first?
Yeah. No, go ahead.
I've got a couple of things that popped in my mind.
I complain about Ubiquity all the time, so I'll let others complain first, and if you don't cover something, I'll fill it in.
Well, I did notice, so obviously I'm Australian-based. We have a lot of stuff here in Australia. We have some stuff in the US. I did notice no matter where I provisioned the cloud from, so we've got one set up for the US guys to sort of have a play around with, one for AU guys. Latency from AU stuff is like 320 milliseconds. And that's on our fiber back connection. So we're getting 2 milliseconds to anything in Australia on the East Coast. So this is obviously hosted somewhere in the US, which means it also inadvertently reports things as down when they're not down sometimes. I don't know if there's an option to sort of change that timing yet. I'm also concerned that given sort of past history, if you sort of moved all of your stuff into the UNMS cloud, you're not paying anything for it, so obviously you don't have any expectation of support. Although given the sort of people you see on the forum, sometimes that's expectations probably the wrong word to use there. There's definitely an expectation from people on forums. But other than that, yeah, it's you have no control over it. They could come back in 6 months and say, we're turning this off. It's not viable. So I'd say don't be 100% reliant on it. But for the billing and stuff, it sort of, it's an easy way to get a leg up.
Yeah. I think for a small wireless ISP that's just starting out, like a mom and pop type operation, it's pretty compelling. They don't have to pay anything and they get something. It's better than what they could have done any other way without paying money.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And they can get the financing on all their wireless gear. Anyone can be a WISP now.
Yeah, yeah. And you guys basically hit the three main points I had thought about this was one is it's a good way to get off the ground, right? So you get started, you actually make some revenue, you're become a profit generating center, right? So a lot of people when they start a WISP, it's not exactly making them money right off the bat. So that's kind of a good, and it's a good litmus test, right? So I can have an effective billing system and management system, and I can start the WISP, and I can see, is this something I really want to do? You know, it's kind of a good way to test the waters to make sure this is actually going to do a thing. But then I also worry about support, right? If I have problems, if, you know, half of my customers, for whatever reason, they're having billing issues, you know, say my payment gateway is having billing issues, am I going to be able to get a hold of somebody at Ubiquity and troubleshoot that? And to be honest with you,
yeah, can you call someone?
Yeah. Like, I don't know why they wouldn't start with a free tier and then a paid tier, you know, like, for the first 50 devices or 50 customers, it's free. You know, I mean, that would be more than reasonable, I think. And then after that, you start paying, or the option to pay and get that, that long-term support, have a phone number to call, an email, you know, that kind of stuff. But then, as you also stated,
they did have something like that. They did have the, like, some of the paid hosting stuff, but maybe it just wasn't popular enough, or maybe this is a way to encourage more people to utilize the system.
Yeah. I mean, free is going to attract a lot of people. And honestly, Ubiquity, I think, is one of the first platforms most people are going to start using, because it's the easiest, right? It's like, I like to say the user interface is like the Fisher Price of wireless. You know, there's big, easy turn knobs, and you just poke a few things and it works, right? And so you're going to attract a lot of less experienced. That was the nicest way I could think of. A lot of less experienced people to get in there, right? And so if you have kind of a free, ready-to-go, snaps in and integrates, that makes a lot of sense. But also you talked about depreciation of services. We've seen it time and time again with their old solar stuff, with the M5, with the first-generation VoIP stuff. So it's like, how long will this thing be supported? And I think that's kind of on everybody's mind. It's like, if I have my whole infrastructure move to this, and say they even give me, say I've got a 1,000 subs on this thing, and they give me 3 months. They say, hey, we're shutting down the service in 3 months. How impossible will it be for me to transition all of my infrastructure over to that in 3 months, you know? And so it could be pretty difficult. Or say I only have 150 users, and so I'm at that break point where I'm just now starting to, like, make a little money, or I'm doing kind of okay, you know, and now I've got to completely re-engineer all this stuff. But, you know, a lot of guys, when they're at that early stage, it's just them. They don't have other support staff, right? And so if they have to dedicate a whole week to figuring this out, I mean, it's just going to be tough. So I guess it just depends on people's appetite for change.
Yeah, you know, most of the things I was going to say, you guys already touched on, you know, but, you know, my primary fear with it, yeah, is that Ubiquity has never completed a software product, and every other hosting thing they've done before, they've canceled. So, it's great for a guy who would otherwise just use QuickBooks or Word for his invoicing. But as soon as
somebody wants to plan for the next 5 years.
Right, yeah, you know, it's a good stepping stone. Okay, you know, this is better than a stick in the eye. But when you can migrate to something else, do it.
Well, also it could be too, like you're saying, say there's a guy that's using QuickBooks and Excel, you know, to track all his stuff and bill, and this gives him an option to actually see how green the grass could be on the other side. Dips his toe and he's like, all right, well, maybe, you know what, this actually is something I need to transition to, even if it's not the UNMS free stuff, if it's something else that maybe is a little bit better supported, you know, he can get somebody to hold his hand and walk him through, sort of thing, you know. Maybe that's a good thing.
Because, like, you know, how's MFi cloud doing these days?
Yeah, you don't have to keep pouring salt on that wound. I get it.
That's the frontline camera.
Oh, that was so insane. It's like we've had cell phones for 8 years, you know, it's like with cameras almost identical to that. I don't know.
What really burns me on that is that I asked them for some. I asked them for, like, yo, they announced it in like early fall. I said, hey, can we have some at the Wispapalooza? You know, we'll get four of them. One for each type of service, because it worked with like YouTube Live, Facebook Live, I think Periscope, and then I think one was just like a time lapse photo thing. I was like, just get us one for each. We'll put it on four people. We'll just see what it does. No response.
They remembered your comments about MFi Cloud, mate.
I was going to say, if it's Mike asking, it's probably for the best that they didn't give him one. So there you go.
Is there a nondescript white van parked out in front of your house right now?
So then what happened? They canceled the product 6 months later, and they, you know, just took a charge on the, you know, I don't think they'd finished even receiving all of them from China yet, and they had already canceled the line. It's like, well, you didn't put it out there, you know. You didn't let people see what it was, and maybe.
My opinion is they were dipping their toe in the water to see if announcing this could pump their share price.
Yeah, yeah. Because what did they say they're going to announce something every quarter or every 6 months or something? Yeah. And I think that's, I bet for the guys that work in there, like in R&D, I bet that's kick ass. You know, it's like, just shoot for the moon, whatever you can think up, you know, and we might actually just, let's make the thing. Let's do a short run, see how it does. That's really cool.
Before we get too far along, I wanted to note that we had little brother Tommy join us. His camera's not working, so he's not showing up. But he's here. He's muted. So
maybe say little Tommy finished. like he's an orphan or something. Like, oh, little Tommy's coming. Can I have a cup of sugar, sir?
T-Cent. That's his rap name, remember?
Yeah. It's T-Cent.
Yeah, he goes hard in the paint, bruh.
Oh, is you not hearing? Are you guys not hearing me yet?
Yeah, we hear you.
Now we got you. We got you.
Yep. Okay. Well, thanks for inviting me on, guys.
For sure. So, like, I was telling Mike, the two Andrews are the smart guys, and everybody else, we can just be as dumb as we want, blissfully ignorant. That's why I always stay so happy. I don't know if you guys know that. So, somebody put something on here about EU Strong. Tell me about that. Whoever that was.
As of September 14th, and this will be relevant to anyone doing credit card transactions over in Europe, the EU have now mandated you must use Strong customer authentication for all credit card payments. What that means to the layman is that they are now using a new method of securing customer payments, in that there is always a sort of two-factor authentication or three-factor authentication in a lot of circumstances. So if you're doing Apple Pay or something, you need to be able to put your fingerprint in at that point in time, or you need to be able to do a face recognition, or it has to have something other than just the card itself. Passive, which is just the card number, two-factor, which is your two-factor authentication, or biometric. The whole reason behind that is just making sure that when credit card payments are being processed, there's a much higher percentage of valid transactions, or obviously a much smaller percentage of invalid fraudulent transactions, which obviously is then better for the banking system as a whole. They're not having to worry about losing all this revenue when people get their credit cards and things stolen. So that is now all live and mandatory in the EU. So anyone that's using Stripe, and Braintree and all of the others, anywhere they're operating in the EU, they should have articles on how to implement that within your systems. We just rolled that out the other week to basically make sure all of our guys are all good. You can also use those systems if you're processing payments in US and Australia and things. Which means your payments are more secure and you have more proof if your customer issues a chargeback or something. You have more information there to say, no, Bill Brown just made this payment for the $60 and then charged it back. But no, we have his fingerprint. Like he verified himself through Apple Pay or Google Pay or whatever. It was definitely him. So
well, they really started moving to biometrics as opposed to something like a PIN number, where you just punch in a
code. You already have that though. So you can have a PIN number, but you can give a PIN number to someone else.
Yeah, for sure.
So this one's about you can have the card, you can have the PIN number, but something to verify the person who owned it or the person who had control of it was there at the time. So that's where the text message comes in. So you can get like a, yes, I got this code on my phone that's linked to this account at the same time. Anyone that sort of works with 2FA on a regular basis understands like that's your way of protecting against just stealing a password off someone. So that's all been implemented as of September 14th. It would be good to see other people rolling that out elsewhere because it, as I said, it does mean that you're suffering less chargebacks and things because you can show that the purchase was genuine and it makes it easier for the credit card processors and the banks and everything as well. So I think that's a win all around. In the EU, it's mandatory. So if you've not heard anything about this, you've got no idea what I'm talking about, and you're doing credit card transactions in the EU, please look this up now.
You said September 14th is when it goes live.
Yes.
So that's today.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Or your cash flow will stop.
Yes, you better, if you listen, because I probably won't put this out till tomorrow. So go back in time a day and... or maybe a week.
Perhaps. Call your IT people right now.
Yeah, wake them up. All right, good. That's cool.
So, here you go. Here's an interesting stat. The next iteration of 3DS is specifically designed, so that's the protection system, to reduce friction in the transaction process as well. Visa reports that merchants using 3DS 2 experience a 70% decrease in cart abandonment and an 85% reduction in transaction time. This is versus, you guys may have seen the old one where you'd have an extra pop-up come up, verified by Visa or secured by MasterCard, and you had to go through typing in questions and answers and all this other stuff. So, but it's shifting that liability from the person who's accepting the payment to the person who's actually making the payment, which is what we as the sellers want.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes sense. Yeah, I can't imagine anybody in the U.S. is going to do anything about it until they're mandated to. We tend not to spend money.
Well, it's like, worst.
Visa's mandate is April 18th, 2020 for the rest of the world.
There you go.
So MasterCard doesn't have a mandate, but if you want to take Visa payments, April 18th next year.
So does that mean they're going to have to recycle all of the existing readers that are out there? So like the card readers and stuff? Because I've never seen one that does a biometric.
No, I think that I don't know how it works with the tap and pay stuff, because this is largely for the online ones being able to, your biometric one is essentially, if you're in a store, like, yes, there's a person there who has presented the card. They are holding the card, not a piece of paper with the details written on it. So you can't do that on the computer yet. You don't have a slot to put the card into and be like, I'm physically holding it. You still have to type in the details. Obviously, Apple Pay and Google Pay make that a bit easier because you can store those details on your phone. But in this case, I think the direct payments in front of someone aren't as affected. But it'd be good to see the US using more of those card readers and PIN codes and things. So I've noticed that doesn't seem to be as big a thing there as it is in Australia.
Yet here's how ridiculous the EU is at accepting cards. So NFC payments were a thing. They already existed. I had done them in the US from my phone, and from what I understand, they're much more popular in other parts of the country. Then we come along with the cards with the chips in them. So then people adopt cards that take swipe or chip, but not NFC.
I'm like, NFC is better, and it's been around, and your reader doesn't accept it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would see that as well. Like, machines with the reader not, like, reader not in use, insert. We have a thing here in Australia where I think it's up to $100 you can use the just tap and pay, but if you're over $100 you either need to enter your PIN or use the chip and enter your PIN. So it's like a little extra layer of protection there.
Gotcha.
I thought it was rather funny when I was in Europe and I would present my swipe only card. And various waiters and servers would be like, what do I do with this? And I was like, here you go. It's like this, guys. Welcome to 1980.
Put the machine with the carbon paper, scratch, scratch, go over the top of it.
Yeah.
Sweet.
I have used the plastic bag to make a credit card work back in the day.
Yes.
Yeah, I used to do that when I was a cashier at a grocery store. Every now and then you'd have to finagle it. We used to take food stamps too. I used to hate processing food stamps. It took forever. And now they just put them on a card like everything else. Makes it simple.
Now begins the Microtik section of the podcast.
The beefy Microtik section. So let's start out with the quick and dirty stuff, and then we'll get to the heavier stuff. So Tom Smith said that in 644.5, which I think is long-term right now, that's the new stuff, the new long-term anyway, he says if you have a drop invalid on your your input or your output chains, you have to explicitly allow GRE and EOIP if you want those tunnels to work. I guess that's new behavior. Let's see.
And it has to be before a drop invalid.
Yeah.
Because a drop invalid, for some reason, will now. It didn't used to drop those. Yeah. Now it does.
It didn't pop GRE.
Is that due to packet fragmentation, or do we know why that suddenly started happening?
I have no idea why. He didn't seem to indicate that his packets are being fragmented or anything like that. He just added that little note, and I haven't tested it or done anything else beyond that, but I'm assuming he wouldn't lie to me.
We're supposed to verify our sources here at the Brothers. I'm going to try it right now.
Obviously, but I'm not 100% sure why that is.
I think he had a link to a forum post on it, so I don't think it was just Tom's randomness. I think it was actually a thing.
All right, I believe him. Let's see what else. There's a little bit of
No links.
Scuttlebutt about the Microtik audience, which is their new, what does that compare to? Ubiquiti's got a thing. It looks like a little clock. What's that thing called?
The Ubiquiti 5 gigahertz.
It's
their little
amplify.
There you go. It's like their home mesh system or whatever, right? And so Microtik's got the new audience. What would you say that looks like? A piece of modern sculpture or something? I'm not like a vase without
some sort
a hole
of air
in the
freshener.
Top. Looks like it should have some flowers.
One of those automatic air fresheners.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you could just hang it up in the bathroom.
my wife would be okay with that sitting around somewhere.
It actually is aesthetically pleasing. I'm joking here, but it is attractive looking. I think you can POE power it in and stuff like that. The only reason we bring it up is it's been announced before, but now that it's actually on Microtik.com, it's probably pretty close to being released. And
yeah, so I can give you the hot goss on that.
Oh, the hotness? What you got?
So the US version is available now. So in other words, if any of the distributors are ordering it, they could get it basically within a week. The LTE version looks like it is mid to late November. So the regular version, so they do it. Yeah, regular, and they do an LTE version as well.
I haven't even looked at the LTE version. Is that going to cover the US bands and stuff, or is that really just for Europe?
Yes, yeah, it's a US LTE version.
Okay, so interesting. So this thing has got 2.4 gigahertz radio and 2.5 gig radios. One is for clients, and the other one's for like their meshing stuff, right?
Yeah. So
can I just interject with a small beef here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody knows you have beef, Andrew. Don't worry.
Router vendors calling routers with three wireless cards tri-band. Like, it's not tri-band. You've got 2.5 gigahertz radios and 1.2.4. And I get that at this stage in the picture, like MikroTik is doing it because everyone else has done it as well.
Keep up with the Joneses.
But if you're bringing out a Wi-Fi 6 device with 2.4, 5.8, and 60, I'd be like, okay, that is a tri-band router. No problems. But the ones that are like, yeah, and all of the expensive ones do it. The Netgear Nighthawks and the ones that look like weird upside-down cockroach routers with 500 legs sticking out of them that cost like $1,000. They're all like, it's tri-band. No,
it's
2.4 and 5.8 and just two radios 5.8.
Well, I share your position, but audience, those 2.5 gig radios are actually set so they don't overlap. One radio does 5180 to 5320. The other radio does 5500 to 5825. So,
could be a really smart or really dumb idea. We'll see how that goes.
And so that's the higher band is the mesh, and the lower band is the client serving.
Good, because I guess like you're stopping people from interfering with themselves. Like, that didn't sound right, but yeah,
it's that government overreach, man. But also, I like to think too. What if they're installing?
It is now tri-band.
Yeah. What if they're installing in an MDU environment or like a condominium where, you know, their neighbors are operating in those bands and they need to go somewhere else to find an open channel.
Somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, now they're kind of stuck.
I guess we'll see if there's been a significant improvement on that band selection process or the channel selection process, I should say. Given the previous auto channel on MikroTik was very basic. So maybe they've updated how that works and it's going to be a bit more, maybe.
I'm just reading the last line of
watch the unicorn fly over.
The product description, it says, order your audience today and start living in the future. The future of easy and elegant networking.
So I don't know if you guys have seen it. Someone posted up an exploded view of the device, so showing the various components. This is probably the most advanced indoor device that MikroTik have built so far. It's basically an evolution of the WAP60G design, where the board has got the heatsink mounted to the back of it, and it's got spots for two LTE antennas on the side of the heatsink, so it's all kind of integrated there. And then at the top, it's got like a conical dish antenna, which puts out, I think, 4 or 4.5 dB gain on the 2.4 and 5. So the gain on it's significantly higher than anything else on the market. And it's going to be uninterrupted because the antenna's above everything else.
Nice.
That is
actually on the MikroTik site, by the way. You can see that on there.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out how to share that picture too. And then
the exploded view. So it's got it's got one upward facing little dish. I guess the other one's kind of downward facing.
I think they're two. There's assuming one for each of those radios, or do both the radios link in at the same antenna?
So those are the reflectors, and if you look in between them, there's these small little square sections.
Those are the antennas, and so that just takes it and distributes it out then.
Yeah.
So instead of blasting up, it actually reflects it out, and I guess vice versa.
Someone at MikroTik is watching this in the future and just groaning when we describe different parts as the wrong thing. Like, that's the router right there on the top. That's the part that
Yeah, it kind of looks like a yo-yo turned on its side, sort of thing. You know.
I like the idea of reflectors, but I don't know how nice it's going to be for multi-story homes, if at all.
That's why you bought two sets.
Exactly right.
Buy more. Since we know someone from MikroTik's watching this, could you add radiation diagrams plots to the website? Since this is a different type of deployment, interested to see how that comes out.
Yeah, well, and specifically given you're supposed to put these around in a house, like what are we? Where's the best positioning going to be? I'm surprised you didn't ask for SFPs, Mike.
It does have two copper gig ports. It's also can be PoE powered. And what else is interesting about it? It's got a four-core ARM, 32 processor on there, 716 megahertz. So it's got some beef. I mean, it's not an underpowered device by any stretch of the imagination. It's got 256 megs of RAM. It's a pretty decent little piece of kit. I mean, what is this thing averaging?
Surprised it didn't do PoE out.
I don't think it said anything about PoE out. It just says PoE.
No, no, I've checked it. Because if you are a wireless operator, you're installing this in a house, then surely you'd want it to do PoE up to your radio. But
that's what I would have thought as well. I was just about to ask that. Microtech seem to be moving away from devices with PoE out. Like the HEP AC 2 doesn't have it either.
Oh, that broke my heart. It would have fit so well.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's not a deal breaker, right? I guess they've...
Now you've got the audience device, which looks real pretty.
It's pretty just balling, no PoE out. But it's going to retail for around $250, I think, isn't it?
$169 is the suggested retail price, and the LTE version is $279.
Oh, okay, so it's the LTE that's more good. Expensive. $169, that's not bad. But I mean, I don't know. I guess depending on your throughput of a normal person, a HAP AC2 is probably going to be plenty for most of the stuff I see here. But this is going to be, I mean, this is like a premier product, right? This is going to be their flagship, I guess, indoor home Wi-Fi sort of thing, huh?
I see this as being meant to compete with Amplify and with Google Wi-Fi, and with there's two or three other vendors that have similar things.
Linksys has one now, Netgear has one, even D-Link has like a mesh setup.
I can see this being sold as a 5G CPE at some point as well.
Right, because they're they've announced they're going to start doing the 5G, and we're talking about 5G like LTE fifth generation, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So like connected to cell networks and stuff like that. And that kind of does, I don't know. I don't want to skip ahead yet, but you can see this kind of working in conjunction with the announcement they did with Latvian Telecom, right? Where they're going to start doing 5G for those guys. So this would kind of fit perfectly into that product portfolio.
But then I know like Ubiquiti and Google, they both have a lot of like pretty user interface information, easy to use stuff going on.
What are you trying to say, Mike? Microtech's got an app for your phone?
Traditionally, that's not been one of Microtech's strengths. Partially because there's 6 million things you can configure, and it's challenging to do all of that while pretty.
Well, you know, but there's a couple of avenues they could take with it. I mean, theoretically, there's some people that I know there's a lot of Soho devices now that you have to hit the cloud interface to actually configure the kit, right? You can't connect right to the router in your home anymore. So they could do that utilizing the API and just have a pretty front end that was customized. Or, you know, you could come out with a...
That would mean they had an ongoing cost to host that sort of cloud infrastructure, but I guess they've done that already with the cloud DNS system and things.
Yeah, there's also security concern, right, with hosting access to all that infrastructure, and do you want to take on that liability? I don't know that I would, to be honest with you.
I'd say it's somewhat easier for Ubiquiti because they're based in the US, and that's if they want to present it to that market. Oh, that's something I should have noted about the UNMS cloud system. It's not available in EU at the moment. They're still working on that because of the different legalities around having all that information from EU customers and the GDPR compliance requirements. So obviously there's consideration there for someone like Microtech as well if they were going to do that.
I know I'm going to get one of the audiences because I think they look pretty baller. I just want to try them out. See how they do. Show me what that thing do.
Yeah, they're giving like they're saying here, like 20,000 square feet of coverage in test results. So that's like most houses. Like it's just
maybe they're testing it in a warehouse. Nice wide open space.
just in a basketball court.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like once you start throwing in walls and you know, humans.
They do specifically say.
What I really need to know is, am I going to get full signal when I'm sitting on the toilet? That's all I need to know.
Can I download cat videos?
Can I download cat videos?
They do specifically say. that the MyCritic app will connect to the router and guide you through a quick setup process. So I'm assuming that means that out of the box, you can jump on the app, connect to it, and do the configuration from there. So if that is the case, then that's not bad. Like, if I could hand one to my mom and dad and be like, hey, guys, download this app, you can set it up. And as far as I'm concerned, that's...
But is it the same app we've already had?
Yeah.
And if
yeah,
so...
Just say the mic.
Yeah, the MyCritic app.
I don't know that lay people can use that.
No, so there's a simpler version of it. Like the basic version you get when you log in is sort of the simple view. Then you can dive into the advanced stuff. I feel like that's probably going to be the same thing for the audience. Like, we've detected this device maybe by neighbor discovery. You can configure that. I don't know what sort of instructions will come with it, but I will definitely be diving in to see how easy or how convoluted that is.
I just noticed that on the wireless specs, MCS9, they're talking about a transmit power of 25 dBm. That's a lot for
it is.
MCS9.
Mm-hmm. It's good.
So that's
coverage.
Give some coverage, yeah.
It's good, and the receive sensitivity is still really good. Up there.
Yeah.
It's still at -70 receive sensitivity.
You know,
actually, there's a slight difference between the two radios, I just noticed.
Yeah, yeah, you got 25.
-72 on one. So the mesh one has a better receive sensitivity than the client one.
That transmit and receive.
Hmm.
That makes sense. They're probably going to be further apart.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, you want to go farther away.
I was going to say also, like, your average client, their transmit's not going to be good enough anyway, right? So you just need to match the specs of the clients, whereas the meshing piece, they're going to have better radios, right? Better sensitivities, it makes more sense. You know what I was just thinking about? The fact that we still have tri-band, where we still have so much 2.4 shipping on people's equipment. But I was thinking, you know, on the average home, maybe that does make sense, you know, because we're starting to get a lot more Internet of Things devices, like the Ring doorbell that needs to go through, you know, the brick exterior of your house and make it all the way to the router. And 2.4 is going to do better for that than the 5 gig stuff will.
I am really interested to see if we see, as a result of this, if there is any improvements to wireless roaming in MyCritic. Because that's something that is traditionally been lacking.
Oh, if you're going from the main to the mesh device or something?
Yeah, so that sort of seamless handoff.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that are really missing from MyCritic's, I guess, enterprise or indoor Wi-Fi features at the moment. One of them is band steering, so effectively delaying the responses on 2.4 beacon responses to force clients to connect to 5 gigahertz. That's lacking at the moment, as well as the Moo MIMO on 802.11 AC Wave 2 is missing, and what Andrew just mentioned as well.
Yeah, it's 802.11k and r, I think, are the ones, like, being able to detect other station or other APs and then sort of do a handoff between them, which traditionally has required some sort of wireless controller. But I guess if you're getting the audience devices in the mesh configuration, then they should be able to do that.
You know, Thrift, now that I'm looking at the audience and you're saying that it's a evolution of the WAP design, that actually does, I mean, it has almost the same form factor with just a different case on it, huh?
Yeah, that's
like
right.
The right shape and everything. I wouldn't have even noticed it had you not said it.
It's pretty much. They have any... Oh.
Got a bigger heat.
I was hoping for some more angles, but yeah, all we get's the power brick and the Ethernet cable.
Oh, it comes with a cable.
See if there's anything more on the distributor site. I can post them up in the Patreon for anyone that's interested.
All right, so shipping soon. I will probably get one here pretty soon. I'll see if I can talk Disher into giving me a review sample. I'll give him a shout-out or something. Maybe he'll give me a freebie. He lives like 10 minutes from here. I should be able to get one. He is pretty cheap, though. I'll say that. All right. Let's get to some of the interesting stuff. So, Thrift, as always, I don't know where you come up with this stuff, dude. You're always, you have your fingers in a lot of pies. But you found, I guess you, I don't, Are you constantly trolling the forums or something, or does this information come to you? But you found out about a few new MikroTik models.
Yeah, so I found this on the forums. Someone had posted it up. They ran strings over some of the binaries in Rotoroes and found a whole bunch of new product strings in there. So these are fairly, I mean, it's early days. What's that?
Sneaky, sneaky.
It is. So these could mean nothing, but someone found three strings in there that indicate that there's some new CCRs coming out, some with 12 times 100 gig ports and 36 times 25 gig ports, another one with 125 gig and two 10 gigs, and another one with a couple of 1 gig ports, and I can't tell what the rest of it is actually from their string actually. And that these are being branded as extreme performance CCRs, which makes a lot of sense.
So if you,
but I guess given how early it is, you can't really read too much into this.
But Andrew, you love speculating.
I do love speculating.
if anybody has ever met you for 5 seconds, he's speculating about all of the things. I think it's good that you don't gamble, because you'd go down a dark path fast.
There is a reason I don't gamble, Greg.
All right, man. So tell me some of your thoughts. You've been in the industry a long time. You've actually worked for multiple hardware manufacturers, correct? And
yeah, I have.
So you've always,
if you were going to build one of these devices, what would you
put? The thing that strikes me straight off is 1200 gig ports and 3625 gig ports seems excessive in a single fixed form factor device. I can't imagine any vendor would build something like that. I mean, even Juniper don't have anything that powerful.
What would you think the form factor of this thing would be? That port complement, you don't think they'd have that shoved into 1U, do you?
I can't imagine they would. If they were going to do that, you'd be looking at like a 2U or a 1.5U device like the Nokia SASs are.
There's a first. MikroTik anyway.
Yeah, and I mean even the older Juniper MX80s and MX104s were that similar strange form factor of either being 1.5, 2, or 3U. They need to build something a bit bigger to fit the port count in there as well as cool it adequately. Yeah, maybe this is MikroTik's first modular router.
You think so?
Ooh.
Could be.
Will you buy the
those are the blades.
Buy the bits and bobs and shove them in as you need.
Maybe the route engine's built into the chassis or as modular, and then the ports are on line cards. I think with MikroTik's move to the Marvell switch chips over the last, 3 or 4 years, they're getting more familiar with ASICs and programming them and that sort of thing. I could imagine that maybe the new CCRs have got hardware forwarding on an ASIC with some of the more service-based stuff like PPP termination pushed up to a general-purpose processor.
So you're suggesting that the line cards would have like offload engines then for routing?
Effectively, yes. Yeah. So it's what a lot of the larger router vendors do. The line cards have effectively got an ASIC on them that does the packet forwarding, and then the route engine just programs that ASIC and manages things like failover and sessions and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Like in the Cisco 6500 and 7500 series, you actually have to, the line card offload engine actually has to match whatever your supervisor is. Otherwise, if you put, say, of course I've never done this, but if you put a lower level line card in, it will downgrade the entire chassis, womp, automatically, and you'll try and figure out why everything's failing. And that one's kind of fun to figure out sometimes. So yeah, that's interesting that they could do some hardware offload.
That's right. I mean, they've been talking about it for years when I've talked to them at various MUM events and around the traps, but I mean, these products take a long time to develop, and maybe this is the first one, hopefully.
So do you think this would be off-the-shelf silicon that they'd be using, or do you think it would be something custom?
I can't imagine they've done anything custom. The amount of time to put into developing an ASIC is just huge. Yeah. I mean, it's possible, but it's a lot of work. It's more likely that they'll use something off the shelf from Marvell, Cavium, Mellanox, could be anybody, Broadcom.
So that would be the chipsets on the line cards. What about the processor on the chassis itself? Do you think they would just go with something ARM-based, maybe? Or?
I mean, yeah, you'd think they'd go with something they're already using and already familiar with, like the Marvell processors or even Talera, but Talera seem to be dead in the water now. There's a lot of options out there. So there's the NXP Layerscape processors that have come up a few times from various people in the forums. They've got a 16-core, 64-bit ARM CPU, which is fairly powerful and has got a really good interface selection on it. Cavium have got their Opteon TX, which is also ARM-based, 64-bit ARM, and MikroTik already have a relationship with them. So they could potentially use that, but you never can tell with MikroTik.
for sure. If you were going to build
things
this,
that make logical sense don't necessarily happen.
If you were going to build this, how would you do it?
I'd probably use the Cavium 64-bit ARM processor because it can handle all of the PPP stuff and things like that, and then use a an ASIC from either Marvell or Broadcom to do the layer 3, layer 4 forwarding on it and hardware. That way, you're not going to upset all your customers that are terminating large numbers of PPP sessions on their MikroTiks, and you're still going to be able to push large amounts of packets.
Oh, you mean like if a BGP session resets and then everybody drops or something like that? Is there...
Yeah, is that one too?
You don't want to see that kind of crazy stuff happen. So, you know what interested me was the idea of extreme performance. Them saying extreme performance on a product, I've always thought of them as extreme efficiency, that being both in power and price. Right, so extremely cost effective and extremely low on power utilization. So if you're saying, you know, 1200 gig ports and 3625 gig ports on a piece of kit and possibly chassis based, do you think they're going to go up in price, obviously, and do you think they're going to go up in power utilization as well, or do you think those will still be pretty efficient on power?
More importantly, are they going to offer paid support?
I think all of the above, Greg. They're going to go up in price, power consumption. But the thing is, the people who have bought CCR 1072s and that, they're paying, what, $3,000 US for one of those bad boys. Stretching another $1,000 is not a huge amount when they're going to get, or even another couple of thousand dollars when they're going to get a higher rate of performance.
I was going to say, $4,000 for that sounds insane. I would expect it to be a lot more than that.
From their competition, who has something close to this, and what is it MSRP at?
The only things I can think of out there are the Cisco ASR 9901s and the Juniper MX204, and Nokia have got a new 7750 SR1. Those are the only ones I can think of that are quite competitive with this, unless you look at the switch vendors like Arista. But they're really for different use cases, and the pricing of those things is like $10,000 US minimum. The Nokias and Junipers are much more than that. They're like $20,000 to $40,000 US.
So. Cisco ASRs are exceedingly expensive, so I can't even imagine what something with a sport complement will cost.
Plus yearly maintenance.
And then, you know, with CCR in the name and not CRS, I'm assuming it's a router and not a switch.
A service router, yeah.
Yeah, that's something.
That doesn't mean you can't forward the packets on a switch ASIC, though.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's something you had alluded to earlier, is that that you've seen similar shenanigans like this in the past where somebody did it where it was really just a switch that could also maybe do a little bit of routing versus a router that can also do a little bit of switching.
Correct.
And that's so an example
of, let's try an example of those sort of routers are the Cisco ASR 920 and the Nokia SAS 7210. They're effectively a high-end Broadcom chip that forwards the packets on a switch ASIC, but they have a small route engine off to the side. Now, the limitations of those is that they can usually only hold a small number of prefixes, like 12,000, because that's all the switch ASIC can hold in its FIB.
That's pretty small.
However, some of the newer stuff, like the Arista 7280s, I think they can hold a couple of full tables in their FIB on a switch chip. So, yeah, the only thing they can't do is terminate high-touch services like PPP.
Gotcha. And as I've seen, most people buying the CCRs, especially the higher-end ones, they want it to do all of the things. They want it to be the end-all, be-all. They want a NAT on this thing. They want to terminate their PPPoE sessions. They want to pull all their full tables from all of their peers and their upstreams and their IXs.
Thankfully, that's
finished in the bathroom.
Thankfully, I've seen more ISPs starting to kind of split that out a little bit. I think we've, you know, and other consultants have been harping on them enough that, you know, quit putting all your eggs in one basket.
I mean, Microtech could do that, but they're going to have to educate their customers that this box can terminate PPP and this one can't.
Well, this one should be used for it and this one shouldn't.
Yeah.
That's right.
A lot of people will take, like, I've seen people before grab something like this was old, like a much longer time ago, but taking something like a CRS-328 and going, oh, it's got a router in it. Like, yeah, I can use that as my main router for a site. It's got 24 gigabit ports. And you're like, no.
Yeah. Hopefully Microtech have learned from those particular products.
I did just want to chime in that I have, I guess, independently confirmed that those are in the files. I just opened it up and did a search, and I do see all those names in the NPK. So it's
Has anyone opened up the set version 7 NPK to see if they're in there?
Andrew, mentioned that yet.
I just did.
We just opened up that topic.
All right, well, let's go ahead and skip down then. What Andrew's alluding to, and I'm sure most of you have heard, is that Microtech has officially announced version 7, which I think is ironic. Like 4 days after they announced version 7, our leak video of version 7, somebody posted on there that it was fake. I was like, what? It's like version 7's released. It's been released. What are you talking about? But it's actually out, although it's for limited deployment right now, right? It's the first thing that's hit, you know, public. I guess, would you even call this an alpha? I mean, it's really...
It's not even alpha. Well,
developer release.
Okay.
Yeah. It is.
It says it's a beta or whatever.
It's very early. It's only released for ARM stuff, right? So that's going to be like your HAPAC2, your WAP, GR, LTE. From what I understand, is it comes down to the new 5G products they're releasing, like the LTE 5th generation stuff. It's going to be running version 7, correct? And... Yeah. That's really why they're throwing it out. That's the whole impetus for bringing this out early, correct?
So it ties into all of this. They've been able to hide those products from us. Like that video that came out with those products was like no one had ever heard anything about them. So there's nothing to say. There's not a whole slew of other stuff there waiting.
What that video has taught us is that we just need to get the Latvian government to do our feature requests. And then it'll happen.
Just someone make friends with someone in the Latvian government and we'll just send all our bug reports through there.
So I think what it is Microtech have been really hamstrung by their 3.16 kernel that they've been running for, what, since 2013, I think started using that. It's pretty ancient nowadays. They've been able to backport a lot of drivers to it. The fixing that IPsec bug that Alex had on the CCRs is a good example of that. But I think they've reached the point where it's just a lot easier for them to move to the new kernel so they can use the drivers that the likes of Qualcomm and their different chipset vendors have published. It's just going to make their life a lot easier. It's really forced their hand, I think.
Rip the Band-Aid off, right? You've got all these beautiful new chips coming out, and all they have to do is just... transition to the new kernel. If you make it sound easy, right? All they have to do. I'm sure it's a nightmare, but
someone at Microtech right now.
Yeah. Shaking their fist towards the heavens. I get it, but it's short-term pain, long-term gain, right? Sort of thing.
That's right. One thing I will say it's really positive about this kernel they've chosen for version 7 is what's called a long-term stable release. So the kernel team actually are backporting patches to this themselves. It's going to make Microtech's job a lot easier to do security patching.
Very cool. All right, let me kind of look down the list. There's no, if you were crazy enough to grab that beta and throw it on a device like a HAPAC2, which somebody, Leroy Jenkins, did on one of theirs, I saw that. And so people have been poking around. I think Thrift, or rather Cox, I think you've been poking around a little bit. But
yeah, I've got one here. I've been poking around.
No MPLS.
Not my main internet connection, but.
No MPLS or BGP on it, right? Didn't you say there's RIP, though?
Yeah. Yeah, there's RIP in there.
That's good.
There's RIP and OSPF. You can get to it from the CLI.
Oh, okay.
But as soon as you try and do anything, it crashes.
Okay. So it's not really there.
No.
I just noticed they have NVMe drivers in there. I don't know if that's new or not, because I haven't poked around NVMe before.
No, I think it's been around for a while.
Okay.
All right. So
go ahead. If you were to load version 7 today, you'd be pretty underwhelmed by it. There's not much in there to really impress anybody. The only thing that really stuck out to me was they've added MACsec support, so you can do encryption on layer 2 segment at the MAC level, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Hey, you're forgetting all about the Linux torrent.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ooh, yeah. Cox found that there's a torrent option now, right?
I'm curious because the limited feature set there at the moment leads me to believe that maybe their new way of distributing the package updates. So rather than having to pull them all off some Amazon cluster here or there, which granted sometimes takes a bit longer, maybe their option now is we'll have a torrent system and that way that you can just pull them off whatever peers are available, because torrents have got built-in error checking and things, so you're going to get the right file. Maybe that's their sort of plan. Nobody
like
that.
You can sign torrents and stuff, right? So that you can make sure they're coming from. Because that sure would be fun to, you know, spoof their torrent cloud or whatever.
I mean, I'll be honest, within my own network, I wouldn't mind just be able to just have all my routers mission mash. And you can already do that somewhat, but it'd be nice to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know. It'd be good. I can't see any real use for it. It strikes me as just a project that they've given some intern, hey, go do this, learn how to do Winbox and add binaries to the image. And
You mean you aren't excited about having a MikroTik seed box somewhere?
Not particularly, no. It's just another angle that people can use to exploit the device.
Bring back VoIP.
No, oh, yeah, they should bring that back.
VoIP. So you're going to lump that in with... SMB sharing, I guess.
Yep. SMB Basically. Sharing. It should also do the dishes.
So
I mean, it's fine to have these features. I mean, it's fine to have these features if they've got a particular market they need to have them for, but put them in a separate package.
Yeah. Or
I totally agree with that.
So long as it's not at the expense of some of the other features that are more important to get, you know, integrated first or whatever. Maybe that was low-hanging fruit, right? And it was easy to just kind of...
Maybe it's a nice little thing to have there so everyone can see there's other stuff going on as well. I still remember there was this post ages ago in the forums when someone was asking about Samba sharing and other stuff before it had been added, and Normus has just chimed in there, and I'm probably not quoting his words exactly, but it was like, MikroTik is not a washing machine. It's a router. Like,
that's so
I always think of that when like something else pops in.
It's not a washing machine. That's so fun. One other thing that somebody mentioned was UDP OpenVPN, right? So previously it was TCP only, now UDP.
Been on the list for people for a long time.
And why would somebody want UDP OpenVPN versus TCP?
Because it's a different protocol.
Lower latency.
Yeah, it's more efficient.
In general. Yeah, it would be more efficient, but if you have an application that doesn't like dropping packets and expects to be on the same network, TCP is going to give you, you know, that more same network-esque functionality. I have an OpenVPN between one of my dad's dental offices and another one of his offices. And doing the TCP, I think, probably saves me a lot of one of their stupid dental programs crashing a lot.
I've had...
it'll be interesting to see its performance at scale, because we have a number of VPN boxes for stuff that have... I think the most we've got up to is about 14,000 connections, and with TCP... restarting that box can be a real pain.
Yeah, I talked to a cat who had a network. It was a government network, and so all of his remote locations actually had to VPN in back to the head office to dump out. And TCP OpenVPN just put too much overhead onto the router. It was just too intensive. But with UDP, you know, it's easier on the box. You can get more throughput and theoretically have a better experience for that kind of stuff, I guess.
Even now, as a little bit of a tip to someone that's trying to do that, if you're trying to run a lot of OVPN sessions on a MikroTik device, and firstly, I'd say go CHR, because you get you get more control. Like if you're building on a VM or something, you can upsize it as necessary. But one of the tricks that we've used is you can limit the number of new connections. So using MikroTik firewall, put a new connection limit per second on your OVPN port. Therefore, you can essentially rate limit the number of new connections coming into the box, keep the overall CPU usage down, and allow your clients to come back in a graceful way. So if you've, rather than reboot the box, and all of a sudden you've got 2,000 devices trying to connect back all at once, which just means your CPU is sitting 100% the whole time, and then it starts dropping sessions, and you get caught in that vicious cycle. Rate limit to 20 new connections a second, 30 new connections a second. What I've actually done is written a script that looks at the CPU load and decreases or increases the number of connections every few seconds while the box is starting up. So you can sort of do that rate limiting dynamically.
And I guess those sessions, as they pop up, they hit a different processor. It's not all locked to a single one, right?
I don't know about the initial authentication part. I know once they're online, that seems to be split. It's just that initial part, getting them all connected, for us is what generates the most load because we're not pushing a lot of traffic over the sessions. So yeah, having that basically the dynamic rate limit there works really well. And it means that you can run a much smaller box for a higher number of clients, whereas I could upgrade to like one of the largest VMs we have and it still wouldn't be able to process the 2,000 of them connecting all at once. Yeah.
Words from the wise. All right, so somebody added an additional little thing in here that there's a split ribbon fib spotted by Thrift. Does that sound correct?
Yeah, that's right. So it looks like there's a separate forwarding table from the main routing table. So it looks like they've clearly split the two in router OS v7. It's hard to tell without the routing package there, though. You know?
There you go. Version 7, it's real. So you're gonna have to color in the.
They should make this the official logo.
Yeah, somebody said, is anyone being the ASCII art of the unicorn that shows up in there? But when you're talking about the rib and fib, and let me make sure I've got this right. The routing information base, the rib, that's where your route tables get loaded into, and then the decision making process happens of where to actually route packets, and then those get pushed over to the fib, the forwarding information base.
And that fib can either be on a line card, like an ASIC, or it can be in the Linux kernel.
Right. So with split ribbon fib, there can be churn in your rib, but your fib stays stationary, right? Until the rib settles down, it reconverges, it decides it needs to make a change, then it'll push that over to the fib. So during dramatic events like peer resets and stuff like that, your traffic doesn't go completely bananas in the interim because your
routing will stay stable.
Yes. So like in the example of chassis-based routers, we've got two supervisors. That's how you can dump a whole supervisor. It just completely dies. You could pull that joker out. And you keep forwarding packets. You don't drop a single thing because all of that's pushed to the individual line card's fib, right?
Yeah.
Brilliant. I would love to see, because there's some environments where I have just been reticent to install MikroTik stuff because I can put a chassis in there with dual supervisors and line cards that have that offloading capability built into them. So I can lose any one thing. I can do maintenance on any one piece and I'm still maintained, right? If you've got insane SLAs that you shouldn't be giving to people because it makes your life miserable. I mean, you can maintain them, but it makes you miserable. I would try and go with something chassis-based, right? Just to give me a little bit more peace of mind.
That's right. So with the addition of that, plus the potential new chassis-based systems or new extreme performance CCRs, it's going to be really interesting to see which direction MikroTik go with this. Could be on the verge of something truly great here.
That's baller. I love the idea of that. I'm sure there's... we were talking about... I don't know why this didn't occur to me. This partnership they've made with Latvian Telecom and making all this 5G stuff. Does a 12-port, 100-gig router seem like it would maybe fit into, a country's telecom infrastructure? I think I could see that going into a Latvian telecom pop somewhere. I don't know why that didn't occur to me till just now, but there you go.
I never thought of that either.
let's make friends with Latvian Telecom and just say, hey, what's your Christmas list? What do you guys want? And then, you know, we can plot MikroTik's roadmap for the next set of hardware for them. It'd be great. It'll make speculating so much easier. We just need to get an inside guy. All right. We have actually hit about an hour and a half. Do you guys have anything else you want to talk about? Anything pressing? Anything urgent?
Well, I'm kind of looking at this entry on the topics here. Brock suggests going to.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm kind of curious as to what this is about. I
checked it out. So
Butt Dot Holdings. There's a scene from Jurassic Park, and I like to say it to my kids occasionally. I say, hold on to your butts. It's Samuel L. Jackson, right? He's got a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. So if you go to butt.holdings, it's just a gif of saying, hold on to your butts. So, jump in there and get that a go. Oh, yeah, something else I skipped earlier is that I was working with a customer, and they need a temporary solution they've got a router that doesn't have 10 gig interfaces on it, but it's got plenty of gig interfaces. And they need to bring in a 10 gig interface. And so I was trying to do that as cheaply as possible because it's just a temporary solution, right? A little Band-Aid, a little MacGyver for you, if you will. You know, it's no router above a kitchen, but it'll do. So I was looking at different options in the CRS. And I know you guys are hissing at me like vampires right now. The CRS 305, which runs SwitchOS, it technically has a lag feature in there. And it's got a 10 gig port. It could do it. Not to say I would do it, but it could theoretically do it. Miller mentioned that if you're using a regular MikroTik, when you're doing a bonding or a lag, whatever you want to call it, you know, where you're LACPing multiple interfaces together, they do fast path on receive only. And then he said that the 326 does it in hardware, of course, because the 326 does like everything awesomely. I ended up just opting for Cisco 4948 because they are $70 on eBay and you get dual power supplies. And you could take in the 10 gig and do a nice, easy LACP bond over to the MikroTik and Bob's your uncle, and it works great. Those 4948s, they're 48 port, 1 gig switches. They have different options, but the one in particular that I ended up with has two X2 10 gig optics. So they're kind of the big mamma jammas, but you can get them off of eBay for $15. The optics, they're still cheap. They are kind of power hungry. I think they're over like 200 watts. At max tilt, but if you're not really pushing it that hard, they actually work as really good gateway devices. I've used them in multiple data centers for gateway devices because they'll do OSPF and light BGP without having to license those features. So they work really well for that. You just make them route reflector clients and people will peer with them. You can get their routes and hand them default. It works great.
This is the dilemma. Why would you spend $300 or $400 on a switch that doesn't have these features when you can spend $70 on one that does?
If you have a power concern,
yeah,
that CRS would do it for 2 or 3 watts compared to 200.
Yeah, but if you're really looking at how much power costs that much, that's like a light bulb. I mean, if you really think about it, like a floodlight.
Well, yeah, but if you don't have off grid or battery concerns, you know, if you're on grid all the time, then that's fine. Yeah. But like, if you have to worry about battery time,
yeah,
you know, that's like, you know, air fiber versus a standard radio.
Yeah, I heard some people saying that they have entire tower sites that run on basically the equivalent amount of power of one of these switches running at full tilt. I mean, and that's max power, right? At 200, I'm not sure what its RMS, kind of its nominal power utilization is going to be. It's probably, I can actually amp clamp one. But I'm guessing it's probably more like a 100-watt light bulb when it's going. And it really does have a really good feature set built in there. And it's back with Cisco's old model of you get everything. I can't remember what you call it, but it's basically a complete license. You buy the thing and you get every feature it's possibly capable of. So you could do a lot with them. They're really nice switches. They can do a lot of throughput.
I just checked FiberStore and new X2 are $120.
All right. Well, you can get Cisco certified compatibles for like $15, or you can get used Cisco optics for like, yeah, like $15-$20 on eBay. So
yeah, it's I'm sure it's the volume thing of, you know, people that are going to fiber store are looking for not 15-year-old stuff.
Huh. Just buy 2 15-year-old things then. That's the way I look at it.
It's a link aggregation group. It's still good.
It's spare on the shelf. It's very inexpensive to put a lot of these things on your shelf. They're getting so cheap.
Yeah.
So yeah. I mean, to that point, I mean, it's still one U form factor. It's still rack mount. It's got 2 power supplies in there. They're tanks. I've had these things get hot as hell, and they keep trucking. Where I've had them in environments where servers shut down, and these things just are bored as they can be, and they just keep on running. You know, they don't care a lick. I mean, but that's network equipment in general, right? It's pretty resilient. So
it's a nice high temp solder there.
Yeah, so they're good switches, and you bring up a good argument, Thrift, is that sometimes you have to try and discern. It's like, why would I use this one thing when, you know, I can go to eBay? And that's the curse of Cisco stuff, is that it just runs and runs and runs, and there's so much of it that's out there. You can get it gray market very inexpensively.
Yeah. I don't know, I do, I've done a lot of work with wireless ISPs and small ISPs in the past, and they're like, should we deploy these CRS-317s to terminate our IX connections into? And at the moment, I'm just telling them not to bother, because those things are a couple of $100, and their feature set's missing multi-chassis lag and a few other features that are pretty critical for that type of deployment. Whereas they can buy like an Extreme X620 off of eBay or some sort of Cisco, like you're mentioning, for like a third of the price, that's going to do everything they need.
Yeah. And a lot of these guys, too, say if you're just doing standard user aggregation, do you really need like the newest, latest and greatest switch? Or would you be good with something that just works really well and will continue to work forever and save you a lot of money right off the bat?
You know, it's going to be stable.
Yeah. Keep on trucking.
Yeah. Some of that older stuff, though, they're not exactly releasing firmware updates anymore. So I guess if there's like kind of some show-stopping bug in there, that you might be kind of
just don't expose your management interface to the internet. You're all good.
Yeah. Well, there was like there was that Urgent 11 or whatever, right? Just passing packets through the device caused it to. I mean, something like that. You know, a showstopper like that could be pretty detrimental. Womp, womp, womp. All right. Well, we beat this stuff up again. I thought we were done. We weren't done. Do you guys have anything else you want to talk about? I mean, it's very seldom I get this many intelligent people in one place at a time, so I am perfectly happy to keep talking.
It's when did we last have both Andrews on the same time?
Ooh, that was a while ago.
Double A,
actually. Just a minute.
18 months, 2 years,
probably.
Yeah. We've caught up plenty of times, but we just don't record it. What happens between us stays between us.
Right.
What's funny is
that's why you moved.
It is, yeah. Definitely.
Our wives are okay with it.
When version 7 was announced, Andrew and I were both at an ISP conference together. And I don't know about you, Andrew, but everyone I mentioned it to thought I was bullshitting.
Yep. It was pretty funny, though, because we got the message from one of the guys who was watching the stream, and both of us are, like, on our way. So the conference is sort of just finished. We're on our way out to drinks. Both of us are on our phones, like, crossing the streets. We're like, oh, who do we need to let know? This person posted here. Like, oh, it's good.
That's ridiculous. Yeah, somebody hit me and was like, oh, version 7. I was like, what are you talking about? I was late to the party. I was off site doing it, so I missed like all of the initial conversation.
Oh. So you know what this signals? All of those feature requests you've been sitting on for the last few years. You can send them to MicroTech now.
Wait until version 7.
Says the guy I'm sure has sent more emails to support at MicroTech.com than anybody else.
Are you back on a blacklist again?
I've been directly told that sending them emails repeatedly will not work. Yet it has.
just make sure that they've got on the list. That's all you need to do. Like, can you just send me a copy of the spreadsheet that you've created for me? I just want to make sure you've got this other one I sent the other day.
It's funny though, some things I've requested and completely forgotten about just pop up in the change logs. So they clearly are adding them to a list somewhere.
Or someone else is bugging them, or like
maybe.
Latvian Telecom.
Okay, so we're putting an official call out. If anyone knows anyone that works for Latvian Telecom, hook us up.
Let us know what the roadmap looks like. Very cool.
Otherwise, brothers, if anyone wants to make a trip to Latvia, we'll do a holiday there for a couple of weeks and just hang out at some pubs around the Latvian Telecom headquarters. See who we can catch.
You gonna do some catfishing again, Andrew?
I never stopped. Like.
Ah, there you go.
Yet, I'm trying to search Google to see if Latvian Telecom has any jobs open, but I'm not.
You're not busy funded enough, right, Mike?
I would definitely defer this to somebody else. Okay,
for sure.
You would hire somebody to do it?
Yeah, well, it has to be someone Latvian, like.
Yeah, to hire someone in Latvia to go work for somebody else just to plant ideas so that we need
just one. For a bit on our blog. Yeah, that sounds like a clear winner.
You joke, but that's worked for Huawei in the past.
That wouldn't surprise me, actually.
Yeah, it has worked for some people, yeah.
Excellent. Well,
it'd be cheaper than a maintenance contract.
Definitely.
All right, well, let's put a fork on it. Or rather, in it. You don't put a fork on your food. You stick it in the food when it's done. All right, Thrifty, if people want to get a hold of you out on the internet, how would they go about that?
Best way would be on LinkedIn, or I'm on most of the wireless ISP groups on Facebook as well. And find me there.
All right, excellent. And Coxie, how would people get a hold of you?
Same. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. I'm on admin at microtik-routeros.com. No official affiliation.
Mm-hmm.
Someday that's going
to
come back.
You haven't gotten a cease and desist yet. It's all right.
I've always offered it. I said, if you guys want it, like I'd be sad, but I'd give it away
for $10,000. All right, Mikey, if you want people to get a hold of you out on the internet, how do they go about that?
Patreon.com, that's the Brothers Wisp. I'm busy, so leave me alone.
Decent. If people are interested in hollering at you, says otherwise. How do they do that?
The Brothers Wisp Slack channel is pretty good. I'm also on the Mimosa forums almost every day. I'm William Five there. If you have Mimosa questions, I can hook you up.
That's something we don't really talk about too much, is the Mimosa stuff. Maybe we ought to.
I'm gonna.
We don't release a lot all that often.
Tell us about.
I don't know. Did you guys ever talk about the C5X and see what other crap have they released? So they did the B24, but that was a while ago.
Yeah,
I've got a couple of 24s. So I found LMT's job section, and it doesn't look like there's anything that technical. Transaction control specialist in retail and logistics, head of e-commerce, and a service consultant at LMT Contact Center.
You just need to get up to the door, that's it. And then you work your way to where you need to be. That's all it is. It's pretty easy.
Yeah.
There's probably not too many technical conferences in Latvia, so you probably just find one of those and go hang out. I bet you'd run into some of the cats. All right. Last little bit of cleanup. I'm Greg at gregsoul.com. If you want to email me, gregsoul.com. I very occasionally blog, not very much anymore. Every now and then I put little reminders to myself on things. If you want to join the action, you want to get in here, you want to get dirty, you want to get nasty, you go to patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. That will get you access to the patron only Slack, and there's lots of channels where basically all this information was pulled from there. I just get a little selection of things throughout the last 2 weeks that have occurred and put them in here. Other people I'm sure are more interested in other things, and there's also stuff I don't understand, so I don't put it in here because I don't want to look stupid any worse than I already do. What's that old quote? It's better to be, or keep your mouth shut and be thought an idiot than open it and remove all doubt.
So, remove all doubt.
There you go. So I prefer to just be thought an idiot. So if you guys have any questions or comments, throw them at us. Anybody else wants to do a 5 tips video or any of that sort of thing, let me know. Happy to do that stuff. It's interesting to hear your voices, your thoughts, your feelings, your emotions. What'd you have for lunch? What are you eating for lunch tomorrow? I'm really hungry. I haven't eaten dinner. I'm thinking about it. It's on my mind. I think I'm going to do fried chicken, just so you guys know. Andrew's taunting me. I hope that hits the floor. You would have deserved that. So thank you guys.
Oh, my
laptop. Talk to you later. Thank you, Andrews. Thank you, Tommy. Thank you, Mike. Back and start
learning. Lighting up the tower. Thanks, so guys.
People can
start
searching.
Shooting up the web in neighborhoods, net surfing. We got horrible jokes. We're loud and annoying, but we're informative facts. We're not disappointing. Just give us a listen, because fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.